Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Path of Paganism, an experience-based guide to modern pagan practice, by John Beckett. Foreword by Christopher Hughes. Narrated by Charles Constant. Publisher's note: this audiobook includes bonus material. Please visit tantor.com and type The Path of Paganism into the search box. Follow the link to the book's page, then, under the supplemental contents section, please enter the access code PATH, and then click the unlock button to access the bonus material. The code should be entered in all lowercase letters. All figures and illustrations referenced in this audiobook can be found in the bonus material. Foreword. At the heart of pagan practice swims the fundamental concept of relationship, and it is the integrity and depth of relationship that breathes life into the intricacies, wonder, and beauty of connection. As a Druid, my entire worldview and practice is held firmly by the principle of honorable relationship and the sacred nature of connection. I am fortunate to have a relationship with the author of this book, a man I do not simply admire but hold in the highest esteem as a gentleman who epitomizes the sheer power and magic of relationship. Within the book that follows, I can hear his voice, an added bonus when one knows the author. This in itself holds another form of magic based on connection. Not only do his words guide me to reevaluate aspects of my own practice, but they also serve to challenge my own path through the glades and groves of the pagan forest. In my practice of paganism, now reaching its 26th year, I have read a lot of books and indeed written a few myself. I have often considered that the role of an author is to inspire, to reach out by means of experience and relationship to touch the paths of others. John's book does just that. And in typical tripartite Celtic fashion, this book genuinely serves to inspire, test, and transform the listener. If truth be told, a vast portion of books contain a hefty dose of padding, and as my own practice has developed, I find myself leafing through pages, passing over anecdotal accounts and verbosity, to jump at pearls of wisdom that I long to find in the works of my fellow authors. Rarely has a book revealed such sagacious, pearlescent treasures until now. I am fortunate that I can call John a friend, someone I have had the pleasure to meet and engage in meaningful druidic discourse over the previous few years. But this is only half the story, for not only has John written a book that inspires, he has genuinely written a book that can fundamentally transform the manner by which we connect to the nuts and bolts of our own practice. He does this as a friend, a guide, an experienced teacher, and even if you cannot hear his dulcet, soothing tones peeling out from the words of dry ink, I can assure you that were you able to hear him, you would sense the passion, wisdom, love, and integrity he has for his journey through the dappled and sometimes bewildering forest of spiritual practice. It is in this guise, as a gracious and sagacious friend, that John guides you, the listener, deeper into a consideration of your pagan spirituality. When I first embarked on this path, a veil of secrecy hung heavily over paganism. Books were slowly becoming available, but in truth, the ones I was led to read did little to inspire or inform my stumbling journey. If only a book like this had existed back then, one which takes the reader through a sequence of considerations that cover a vast array of important issues surrounding the practice of pagan spirituality. John's guidance is wonderfully profound without being overly complicated. At times, he challenges the listener to look deeply at subjects that may cause us to twitch uncomfortably and turn the page. He tells us what to do with that information, how to be a pagan and not just how to think as one. There are a myriad of important messages in this book, one of which states that the primary focus of your paganism should be on what you do, not wholly on what you believe, of getting down and dirty with the detail of paganism. There are no spells here, no exercises thrown together for the sake of word count, but a gentle questioning and exploration of the very principles that bring vibrancy, life, pain, joy, and beauty to pagan practice. Contained within the book that follows is a reflection of John's personal story through the human condition. It is from that platform of having been there and done it that John serves to inspire his readers. Paganism has the power to answer the big questions in life, but first we must figure out what those questions are and why they matter. John helps us to articulate those questions and then serve to answer them meaningfully. To find meaning, this is a theme recurring throughout this book, John asks us to consider that whilst religious experience is important, experience itself is literally meaningless unless we have a belief structure by which to interpret it. This leads to a sense that we are part of something greater than ourselves, allowing us to become our better selves. Another Beckett pearl of wisdom lies in his exploration of authenticity and genuineness. He asks that we always credit our sources, never pretend to be something we are not, and steal from the best. I intend to steal from the best. There is deep wisdom in the book that you are listening to, wisdom enough to not simply inspire but affect the integrity, depth, and expression of your paganism. John really has been there, done it, and bought the t-shirt. His journey through turmoil, discovery, and wonder is laid before you, and his insights are worth their weight in mead. John describes himself as an enthusiastic participant. His paganism is practical spirituality that brings to his life the utmost joy and meaning. And yet the journey has been colored by issues, problems, the fighting against programming, and the turbulent transition from one way of believing to another way of doing. One can sense that his journey has not been a bed of roses, and if it has, there are times when he has laid upon those fragrant petals and grimaced at the thorns that pierced his skin. And yet through it all, there is love, dedication, and awe. This book is an invitation for you to gather under the oaks, to add your story to the tree of tradition, to color this paganism with the authenticity of your experience and beliefs. John offers you the tools by which to do that. Listen on, be inspired, be transformed. Christopher Hughes, Chief of the Anglesey Druid Order, Isle of Anglesey, June 2016. Introduction. No matter how you came to this point, right here, right now, wanting to learn more about paganism, you aren't starting from scratch. You've been exposed to many religions, religious ideas, and ideas about religion throughout your life. Perhaps like me, you grew up in a fundamentalist church where you were told you had to believe certain unprovable supernatural propositions or you were going to hell. Perhaps you grew up in a household where religion was scorned, and you were taught to believe nothing that couldn't be proved using the scientific method. Or perhaps you're perfectly satisfied with your religion and just want to learn something about a religion that's new to you. Regardless of your personal background, you've probably sung God Bless America or God Save the Queen if you live in an English-speaking country. You've heard stories of Moses, Jesus, and Muhammad. You've seen religious art and had holidays from work and school for Christmas and Easter. You've seen the Ten Commandments on TV, heard them invoked as a moral compass, and heard arguments over their place in the public square. You live in a world where Christianity infuses the very fabric of society, where Christian images, ideas, and values dominate politics, entertainment, and ordinary conversation. You also live in a world where the Christian religions are given lip service, and their teachings are used to serve the religion of greed. Nature is valued only for how we can exploit it for financial gain. Species are driven to extinction for greater profits, and our fellow humans are seen as nothing more than human resources to be employed at the lowest possible cost and then discarded when we're finished using them. We all like to think we're independent, sophisticated free thinkers, but like fish who aren't aware of the water in which they swim, even the most mindful of us can't see all the Christian and materialistic concepts that influence our thinking and our lives. If we simply begin studying paganism in isolation, our new religion and new spirituality will be built on the foundation of our mainstream society. When I first discovered paganism, I was thrilled. Here was a religion that honored nature, saw the divine as female as well as male, and didn't insist I believe things I couldn't honestly believe. I dived right into it and floundered for 8 years. The beliefs and practices I was trying to begin were at odds with the unstated assumptions I had learned from the mainstream society. It was only when I finally began to examine those assumptions, when I became aware of the water in which I was swimming, that I was able to start building a meaningful pagan practice. In the 15 years since I became aware of that water, I have become a full member of the Druid grade in the Order of Bards, Ovates, and Druids. I've served continuously as an officer in my local CUPS, or Covenant of Unitarian Universalist Pagans group, and served 3 years on the National Board of Trustees of CUPS. I've become a blogger, a teacher, and now an author. Most importantly, my devotional relationships with the gods I serve and with the natural world have been strengthened and are a constant source of meaning and inspiration for me. Perhaps you're looking to follow the same path I took. Perhaps you picked up this book out of curiosity. You wonder why people would leave a religion that holds such a prominent place in society. You'll see as you listen that while Christianity can be a fine religion, it overlooks vital parts of the human soul. There are huge gaps in understanding the agency of individual human beings and of non-human species, the acknowledgement of spirits other than just one God, full acceptance of the LGBTQ community, and the urgency to defend the environment. These are just some of the many reasons people are now flocking to paganism. My goal is that even if you're not considering paganism as a path, you'll come to better understand why people are reacting against mainstream society through these forms of spirituality, and maybe be able to use some of the advice and exercises presented here to further your own spiritual growth. So in addition to presenting an introduction to modern pagan beliefs and practices, this book also examines the unstated assumptions of mainstream beliefs and practices. We'll look at the tension they create, the difficulties they cause for pagans, and how we can resolve the conflicts within ourselves, and how we can live lives that are authentic, meaningful, and virtuous. This book includes questions for contemplation, suggestions for building a pagan practice, and rituals to help integrate new concepts into your life. It can be tempting to gloss over these sections, but I encourage you to give them your honest consideration. Becoming pagan means more than adopting a new set of books, tools, and holidays. It means more than praying to different gods. It means discovering a new way of seeing the world and our place in it. It means challenging the assumptions of mainstream society, keeping only those that prove true and helpful, and discarding those that show themselves to be false or harmful. It means building a solid foundation from which we can explore the nature of the universe, the gods, ourselves, and our communities. It means learning to form and strengthen good relationships with all of them. Most introductory pagan books begin by diving into their particular flavor of paganism. That's understandable. If you pick up a book on druidry, you want to start learning how to become a druid right away. If you buy a book on witchcraft, you want to start practicing witchcraft as soon as you can. There's nothing inherently wrong with that approach, but this book takes a different path. Part 1 will discuss the foundations of modern pagan religion, of nature, the gods, and our ancestors. Part 2 will cover what we do with that foundation, daily spiritual practice, devotion, and dealing with the sometimes unpleasant realities of life. Part 3 will introduce intermediate-level practice and the work that goes into pagan leadership, and Part 4 will cover what to do when you reach the end of the instructions. This journey is not easy. Nothing worthwhile ever is. But it has proven meaningful and helpful to me over these many years, and I trust it will for you as well. Shall we begin? The purpose of religion. For most people in most of the world, for most of history, religion has been so tied up in basic questions of group identity that changing it has been something most people have never considered. These are my people, these are my ancestors, these are my gods. This is who I am. Despite that, the two largest religions in the world, Christianity and Islam, are religions with a definite beginning that have grown by conversion. It's one thing to convert under the pressure, sometimes subtle, sometimes not, of missionaries and evangelists. It's a very different thing to realize that the religion into which you were born does not match your beliefs and your values. Many people who find themselves in this position stay in their birth religion anyway. Sometimes they ignore the teachings they find offensive. Sometimes they actively seek to change them. Some abandon religion altogether. Others become seekers, exploring the religions of the world to find the one that fits them best. Some know exactly what they're looking for, some have only a vague idea, and some know nothing other than they're looking. There are 5 main needs or purposes we seek to fill with our religion. Religion helps us deal with the human condition. Despite the unsubstantiated claims of biblical literalists and the naive fantasies of pagan romantics, there was never a time when people lived a life of ease in a garden or a forest where food was always there for the taking and everyone lived in peace. Life is hard, and it has always been hard. Obtaining adequate food and shelter has always required work and has never been certain. Disease and predators have always been present, usually much more prominently than they are today. People have always fought over resources and claims of dominance, and at the end, death always awaits. We are the descendants of those who survived, and their determination has been passed down to us. But that's only a partial answer. We don't just want to survive, we want to succeed. We want to live lives of meaning and joy, Religion helps us deal with life's pain and complexity. It helps us answer the big questions of life. Where did we come from? What happens when we die? How should we live? What is good and what is evil? What is good and what is better? Theologians, philosophers, and ordinary people have contemplated these questions for as long as we've been human. These are hard questions, but if you want to live consciously, if you want to be awake, they are questions you must contemplate. Even if we try to avoid them, they won't go away. They sneak into our minds when faced with difficult decisions, in the middle of the night, at the death of an elder or even a pet. It's better to think about death on a bright Saturday in July when all is right in your world than to wait until death is in your midst. Any religion can give you answers to these questions. The fact that different religions give different answers, sometimes radically different answers, is proof of how hard they are. A good religion will help you explore the questions, contemplate possible answers, and find the ones that best fit your values, beliefs, and experience of the world. Good religion will give you tools for living when there are no answers. Religion helps you become a part of something greater than yourself. Contemporary Western society is very much focused on the individual. Ironically, this emphasis on the individual has uprooted our identity in our wider society and made it much more difficult for us to know who we really are. This makes us susceptible to the evil sorcerers of marketing who want us to find an identity in the products they have for sale. Religion helps us be part of something greater than ourselves. We may be small, but we are part of a community that is larger and stronger. We may only know our parents and grandparents, or perhaps not even them, but we are part of a heritage that goes back millions of years. Our lives may be brief, but we are part of families, communities, and religious traditions that will be around long after we're gone. What happens to the individual consciousness after we die remains a mystery. What happens in this world is not. We live on in our deeds, we live on in the memories of those who knew us, and we live on in the families and communities that continue for many generations. Religion helps us become our better selves. We need not subject ourselves to guilt and shame to acknowledge that we do not always act in accordance with our highest values. We have millions of years of evolution telling us to do what feels good now. Sometimes that's great. Other times we choose what is easy over what is right. And sometimes the situation is so complicated that we don't know what's right because we haven't considered all the factors involved. Any religion can give you rules to follow. A good religion will teach virtues and values, what is right and fitting, what works well. A better religion will teach you how to embody these virtues and values on a daily basis, so when you're faced with a difficult situation, you know how you want to respond and you will. Religion helps us understand religious experiences. Many of the world's religions began with an experience. Yahweh spoke to Moses. Saul had an experience of Jesus and became Paul. The Buddha sat under a tree until he was enlightened. What was unique about these experiences is not that they happened or even that they were especially powerful. What was unique was what the recipients of those experiences did after they had them. Religious experiences still happen today. Sometimes they're dramatic. More often they're subtle. But these experiences are literally meaningless until we interpret them. Religion gives us a framework for interpreting and understanding our experiences, offers practices to reinforce them and to repeat them, and makes practical suggestions for implementing them in our ordinary lives. Pagan religions do all these things, and they do them from a perspective that honors nature, the gods, our ancestors, and our own unique place in the world. Learning. Helical, not linear. Throughout our lives, we are told how important it is to get a good education. Whether we want to or not, we're sent to school for at least 12 years and usually much longer. We're told we can't get a good job without the proper education. We're told, in not so many words, that we can't be trusted to do serious jobs without the proper certification. This isn't wrong. If I go to a doctor, I want to know she's been to medical school and passed the state board exams. There's no guarantee she's a good doctor, but it's a start. The problem with this emphasis on formal education is that it marginalizes other ways of learning. The vast majority of people still learn their basic life and social skills in the same way humans have learned them for tens of thousands of years, from their parents, grandparents, and neighbors. For hundreds of years, the primary way of learning a trade was through apprenticeship, working directly under a master craftsman. Even in today's high-tech society, it's still possible to learn many things by diving in and figuring them out as you go. If we can learn from classwork, from elders, or even from books, we're less likely to make mistakes as we begin. But there are some things that can only be learned by doing, by experiencing them for yourself. This is especially true in religious matters. Add to this the many areas of emphasis within witchcraft, druidry, and other pagan traditions. How much do you need to learn before you can start? How much history? How much theology? How much daily spiritual practice? How much hands-on magical work? You need not develop an archdruid's knowledge and expertise before you start practicing druidry. If you wait to start practicing until you're ready, you'll never be ready. This book presents material in small segments. Listen to the text. Contemplate what it means and how it connects with your life. Then put it into practice, both with the ordinary action and with the rituals that are included in the book. Review the segment and see what you've learned. Then go on to the next segment. Over time, both within this book and in your wider life, you'll find that learning to be a pagan is not a linear experience. It's a helical experience. Like a coiled spring, you move around the circle, picking up bits and pieces of this and that. After a while, you come back to the same point on the circle, but it's not the same place. You've learned more, and you've moved forward, too. Each time you come back to the same point, you'll bring new experiences and new perspectives to your practice. Winter solstice is always the same point on the wheel of the year, but with each solstice, you knew a little more than you knew with the last solstice. Knowledge is important. Otherwise, I wouldn't have spent so much time writing this book. But paganism isn't just about what you know. It's also about the sun on your face, the wind on your skin, the dirt on your fingers, and the rain on your shoulders. It's about that special feeling you get when you stand under the full moon. It's about lighting a candle, pouring an offering, and saying a prayer. So listen on. But remember that doing is just as important as listening. Part 1. Building a Foundation. 1. Foundations. Before we begin our exploration of modern paganism, let's take a deeper look at the foundations of religion in general. Let's look at some of the questions rarely addressed in Sunday schools, Beltane circles, or atheist meetings. The origins of religion. How did religion begin? It depends on who you ask. An academic, operating from a non-theistic viewpoint, will talk about the need to inspire self-sacrifice for the good of the group. Whether you live in a hunter-gatherer society where you occasionally need to bring down large, dangerous animals with spears, or you live in a modern society where you occasionally need to defend your country against invading armies, the continued existence of a group often depends on the willingness of people to engage in activities that are dangerous but necessary. If they believe there's an afterlife and that death is not the end of their existence, they are more likely to take those risks willingly and even enthusiastically. A cynic, also operating from a non-theistic viewpoint, will talk about the desire of the powerful to control the masses. Kings and warlords look for justification for their dictatorial rule. Being a priest is an easier gig than being a soldier or a farmer. They look for excuses to maintain their status. There is some truth to both of these propositions. People who are bound together through common bonds are more likely to sacrifice themselves for the greater good. And we need only look at the abuses of religion throughout history to realize that some religious leaders are in it for themselves and not for their gods or their people. But these propositions are incomplete. They ignore the religious experiences that people have had for at least as long as we've been human. Experiences of wonder and awe in nature, the experience of birth and death, powerful and prophetic dreams, and the interactions with gods, ancestors, and spirits that are sometimes faint and subtle, and sometimes overpowering. It's hard enough to figure out the exact origins of a modern religion such as Wicca, the religion of witchcraft first presented, or perhaps invented, by Gerald Gardner in the mid-20th century. Christians have been arguing for 2,000 years about the key facts and myths around the origins of Christianity. We have no hope of reconstructing the origins of the original human proto-religion, assuming there ever was such a thing. But we are not completely ignorant. There are burials with grave goods dating back hundreds of thousands of years. Our ancestors left cave paintings, The famous ones in Lascaux, France, are 17,000 years old, while others, such as the ones in Chauvet Cave, are more than 30,000 years old. There are ruins, the oldest of which, Göbekli Tepe in Turkey, are more than 10,000 years old. All of these artifacts took effort to create. They represent an expenditure of time and energy, sometimes small and sometimes huge. People would not have left them unless they had a good reason, unless creating them was a meaningful endeavor. Our modern culture likes to think of ourselves as advanced and sophisticated, perceiving previous cultures as ignorant, primitive, and unevolved. But it's important to remember that biologically, we are identical to the earliest Homo sapiens sapiens, humans as we've been for at least the past 100,000 years. We're them, and they're us. When we stand outdoors at night and look up at the full moon, we are doing what people have done for thousands and thousands of years. When someone dies and we contemplate our own impending deaths, we are doing what people have done for thousands and thousands of years. When we feel moved to speak to the gods, to ask for their help, and to express our thanks for that help, we are doing what people have done for thousands and thousands of years. The social scientists and the cynics aren't wrong, but they overlook religious experience. Organic religion. Imagine that through some magical, mystical occurrence, all religion is suddenly gone. Churches, mosques, temples, and sacred groves disappear. Religious texts, commentaries, and literary references to them vanish. Religious music and artwork are gone. Devotional altars disappear, and holy days are simply work days. Priests are transformed into accountants, and monks suddenly become grocery clerks. It takes a pretty powerful imagination to visualize a world with no religion, and what I see is horribly bland, but it is possible. Now, in such a religion-free environment, imagine you walk outside on a clear, dark night and look up at the full moon. What do you feel? Imagine you watch the sunrise every day for a year, marking the changing seasons and the ebb and flow of light and dark. Is that simply the mechanics of rotation and revolution? Or is there something more? Imagine you experience the birth of a child or the death of a friend, and you contemplate your own birth and death. Imagine you dream of a long-dead ancestor. Imagine you realize the benefits you enjoy because of their lives and work. How might you respond to that realization? Imagine you live in a place and it becomes yours, not in a sense of possessing it, but in a sense of relationship. Your home, your mountain, your trees, your city. How might you honor and strengthen that relationship? Even if religion were to completely disappear, it would quickly return because people have religious experiences all the time. This is organic religion, a religion not of doctrine but of experience, not of rules but of relationships, not of the intellect but of the soul. Beliefs would flow out of those experiences as people attempted to interpret them and understand them. Practices would arise as people attempted to facilitate further experiences and live in alignment with their interpretations of them. Before long, people would be writing and talking about their new organic religions. Some would begin practicing together. Beliefs and practices that were most helpful would spread, and those that were less helpful would fade. Practitioners who were especially dedicated and especially skilled would be consulted for advice and assistance. Before long, organic religion would yet again evolve into organized religion, and contrary to the knee-jerk reaction from some, including many pagans, that wouldn't be a bad thing. As with every other human endeavor, religion in the present draws on the wisdom of the past. There is no need for everyone to invest time and energy into reinventing the wheel of religion. We can draw on the wisdom and teachings of our predecessors, build on them, and leave a stronger, more vibrant tradition for those who come after us to do the same. Organized religions begin to lose their effectiveness when they move from spreading best practices to enforcing orthodoxy. When the affirmation of past beliefs becomes more important than the facilitation of present experiences, a religion loses its organic power. In a religious-free society, it will begin to lose members and influence, setting it on a death spiral that may be long, but that is certain. The modern pagan movement is one example of what happens when those who are tired of lifeless religion return to organic religion. How do we know what we know? So much of what we think we know is no more than casual assumptions. When we're very young, we accept what our parents tell us as fact. We know them, we trust them, and they've always been good to us.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?